Last week, the Productivity Commission released a draft report on access to justice arrangements. Commissioner Warren Mundy says the report highlights a number of serious barriers that prevent people from resolving civil disputes in a timely and affordable way.
Well, Damien, I think in the large, people are able to get disputes resolved in an orderly and cost-efficient manner, but there are a significant number of disputes which go unresolved for any number of reasons. Either people don't know how to resolve them, they have quite entrenched legal needs, which makes it very difficult to think through the issues, or that too expensive, or the forums aren't available for them to do so.
The perception is that the system is slow, expensive and way too adversarial.
And that description has been put to us by quite senior judges and by senior counsel and other prominent lawyers.
Indeed, I think WA Chief Justice Wayne Martin said, quote, "The hard reality is that the cost of legal representation is beyond the reach of many, probably most ordinary Australians. In theory, access to the legal system is available to all. In practice, access is limited to substantial business enterprises, the very wealthy and those who are provided with some form of assistance." Did he get it right?
Well, Damien, I mean, His Honour has been on the record on these issues for many years, and certainly in cases that end up in Supreme Courts would be the matters that His Honour sees most regularly. That is a reasonable proposition. That proposition has been put to us by senior counsel in Sydney who have in fact said to us they couldn't afford themselves.
Even the QCs can't afford.
Even the QCs or the SCs, depending on their commercial needs. But in other circumstances, there are vast numbers of civil disputes that are resolved, for example, by ombudsmen dealing with day-to-day matters that ordinary folk that will be listening today with respect to their phone bills, with their electricity bills, disputes, for example, in Victoria, matters in VCAT. There's a wide range of disputes. Very few matters end up in the superior courts, and nor should they. I mean, it has been put to us that, you know, the whole idea is to get disputes in an appropriate forum where they can be resolved at low cost and quickly.
It's about working out the appropriate legal forum, but it's also about being able to afford lawyers' fees. And, of course, traditionally in Australia you have lawyers charging their time, time-based billing. But you don't think that's such a good idea.
It's been put to us that the issues are not so much about the cost, although cost is an important issue, but that the vast bulk of people, or certainly a substantial number of them, when they go and have a discussion about lawyers, they aren't fully appraised as to what will be the cost consequences of the action that they're pursuing. Now, this is really a bit like your mobile phone contract. There isn't adequate disclosure.
What are the problems, as you see it, with time-based billing?
Well, the issue with time-based billing, essentially from our point of view, is that it incentivises lawyers to use up time. So they're not provided with an incentive to reduce the cost for their clients, but rather they're incentivised to blow things out. Now, our view is, and it's been put to us, and there are models of legal firms both here and in the United Kingdom where on reasonably straightforward matters, a fixed fee can be quoted. And we think that's something that should be encouraged.
And that would get around the over-servicing, the inefficiency, the lack of certainty to clients that accompanies time-based billing.
I think, to be fair, I mean, lots of other professional services providers, if you go along to them, if you go along to an architect and say, can you draw these plans for me, they will say $X thousand for the plans, Damien. So we think there's a scope there to improve. Now, that won't be the case in complex matters and in all matters, but we think there is an opportunity to reform this. And a number of firms, increasingly, particularly in perhaps negligence matters and things like that, are going that way. We've seen it in conveyancing, for example.
Now, the report also suggests that litigants who can't afford lawyers should be able to accrue HECS-style debts. How would that system work? How would you accrue some kind of government loan?
The problem that we're trying to address here, Damien, is that, and I think the evidence is reasonable on this, is that people who are very wealthy can deal with their own legal expenses, and people who are very poor are assisted through the legal aid system. But there are a whole pile of people, perhaps ABC broadcasters, productivity commissioners, who were faced with a substantial legal matter, would probably have to mortgage the house to bring the matter. So the HECS-style process, which has been put to us by a submitter, well, the details are not clear and we're asking for further information. I'm at pains to stress that we haven't recommended this, but we're interested in exploring it, are around you would proceed with litigation, it would be understood that you would be able to borrow the money, and then you would pay it off over a period of time, probably in accordance with your income. And it's suggested that if the matter was successful and there was a substantial award, that you would pay it off straight away. But this is just one of a number of approaches that we're interested in. Obviously, litigation funding is another way that people may fund their litigation.
That's where private investors agree to fund a case in return for a cut.
Yeah, typically where there are a wide range of individuals involved, so typically, but not exclusively in class actions.
And that already happens, of course, here in Australia.
It happens in about 7% of class actions in Australia. But in those circumstances, as we understand it, not only does the funder take percentage of the cut, they fund the litigation as it goes on, and in the event that the litigation is unsuccessful, they bear the adverse cost order that the court might award. So that's a different situation to a no-win, no-fee arrangement, which we typically see where the litigant is exposed potentially to the adverse costs order.
Now, litigation funders are not lawyers per se, but of course we have another model, which is the contingency fee system over in the USA, which is whereby the lawyers agree to take on a case and in return for a cut. So it's not an independent third party like a litigation funder, it's the lawyers themselves who do this. And you're saying, let's think about this.
Well, our preference would be that the legal profession be properly regulated and their conduct be properly regulated and their disclosure obligations be clear, rather than rule out an option for them providing to their clients. Because at the end of the day, as economists, we look at this and can't see an awful lot of difference. If it is a question of legal ethical conduct, then I'd hope that the legal profession could sort that out.
Now, the report also says we should look at the way courts award costs, because at the moment, normally if you win a case, the court gives you your damages, but also says, and your legal costs will be paid by the losing side. But you're suggesting that we need to think about how those costs are calculated in the first place.
Well, the evidence that's been put to us, Damien, in the first instance is that the courts don't give you all your costs in most instances. And what we're suggesting is that people's understanding of the potential of the awards of costs against them is unclear. It's a bit like their lawyer fees. And what we're saying is that people should, when they go into a matter, have an idea about what the cost outcomes are. So there should be fixed scales that relate to the length of litigation, but also the monies involved. But beyond that, where there are incentives within some of the costs awards arrangements for particularly affluent litigants, well-resourced litigants, to drag the process out in the hope that the less economically resourced litigant will abandon the matter. So we think there's some opportunities here to resolve these issues. We understand that it is very difficult to set cost awards in very complicated matters, but there is some evidence in the United Kingdom and practices in the United Kingdom whereby at the start of a matter, the parties seek to agree costs that would be awarded in the outcome of events. And if that's not possible, then there's a discussion with the judge so that the parties...
About what? Capping the costs?
Capping the costs. But we also make some observations about, for example, self-represented litigants who, at the moment, if they are successful, do not get a costs award. So obviously, if a large corporation is facing a self-represented litigant, they're at no risk of a cost award against them if they're unsuccessful. And similarly, in relation to pro bono service providers, we think costs should be awarded to winning parties full stop, be they represented by lawyers, be they representing themselves, or be they represented by pro bono lawyers working for CLCs. Now, there's an issue about where the money goes, but the principle is that everyone should face the same incentives about their behaviour when they go to court.
How difficult is it for self-represented litigants in this system?
Part of the problem is, Damien, is which system. It's pretty easy for self-represented litigants in some tribunals. In others, it's not. We've made some observations about what we call creeping legalism in tribunals. Tribunals are meant to be, by and large, places where people can go and resolve their matters. Now,
we're talking about basic administrative matters,
tribunals,
tenancy matters,
social security matters, veterans affairs, those sorts of things. So those places should be easy. And indeed, some presiding magistrates have said to us that the magistrates' court in many cases should be somewhere where people can come unrepresented.
And indeed they do.
And they do.
A lot of the time, now, for better or for worse.
Yeah, and indeed family law is another issue. So there are cases where self-representation can actually be seen as a success of the system, because people are able to go to these institutions and get their matters resolved.
Self-represented litigants, evidence of the success of the system. Hold that thought. That was Productivity Commissioner Warren Mundy talking there about the Commission's draft report on access to justice arrangements.